knock on Mayor Hamilton's door. We haven't seen him forever. You look great. How are you? It's
hey,
been a while.
It has been a while. I'm glad to talk to you again. I hope everything's well with you.
Not bad. We're trying to get everything figured out, and sometimes everything doesn't get figured out. But since you're here and I'm here, we've got a million things to get to. It's been a while since we've spoken. I'm going through my calendar. We did not have a show last week because we took the day off. I lost my great friend Terry Stoltz, my radio partner on Tuesdays and Fridays, and he was Joe's right-hand man for high school basketball, so we were not here last week. That's why we weren't here. The week before that, it was spring break, so that was a little sunburn, sun fun. The week before that, have I spoken to you since
4 weeks? You had the engagement director, Kaisa Goodman, for
who was fantastic.
4 weeks, I think. Yeah.
So I missed you in the month of March until right now. It's been a month.
I don't know how we've made it, but here we are.
Did you have your State of the City? How was that?
Was that a good time?
It was. Well, Kaisa did a great job pinch hitting for you, and I threw some curveballs at her that I'm going to throw right back at you today
because
why? Well, people demand answers. That's
you're a pitcher. You got to throw pitches.
Well, I'm a lefty, though, so I'm a junk baller. So they're going to come from, they're going to change some speed. They're going to probably be in the dirt a little bit.
Give me a screwball. I don't want to try to hit it.
Well, I can't blow anything by you. My arm is gelatin.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, you can. When I open the door, you can hear. Is that the door?
Doesn't take much to blow something by me at the plate, but I'll do my best.
When I open the door, they say, "Boy, that door sounds funny." I said, "No, that's my shoulder. I'm not sure what's what's in there." Hold on, I've got some orthopedic surgeons calling, and I need to hang up on. It's great to hear your voice. Thanks for making time for us today. I've got a whole big list of stuff.
Jump in. Let's go.
It's been too long, but we have things going on, and I'll just get it right off the bat and get started because I asked Kaisa this. I know you've been asked it since then. The road at Cascades Park, people are demanding answers. You're the outgoing mayor. What can you do or can't you do? We know you're not running for re-election. We know that, early voting starts a week from today.
Yes, it does.
That's a whole other story we'll get to here in a minute. So the road is down there. I'm told it's in the council's hands. Kaisa did a great job of explaining that. But how did we get to the council? Could you have fixed this? I know the people that live over there have an issue with it. Tell me where we're at and what you're hoping to get done and what you can or cannot do.
Sure. And thanks for asking. So old 37, back 70 years ago or 100 years ago, was the main road into town. And we created a park 100 years ago around that main road into town, Lower Cascades, which is a beautiful a beautiful park. It's actually our oldest park, and that road has been serving the community for a long time. During the pandemic, one other thing you should know: we have a transportation plan, which is a very detailed document that is developed with a ton of public input and everybody telling us how should we change the transportation infrastructure of the city. Goes through city council and they approve it, and then that plan includes a statement that we need to have a bike and pedestrian path through Lower Cascades. So that's, as a mayor, that's kind of an instruction to me to say, hey, mayor, make sure we get this path in there. Rolled to 2018 in the bicentennial bond, we put money and said, let's do a path in through Lower Cascades. Our hope was we could close one lane of the road, keep it one way, feed it north and south appropriately, and use one lane of the road for a bike and pedestrian path. The engineers got into it, and as sometimes happens, they said, you can't really do it. It's not safe. It's not wide enough. You can't have all that pedestrian bike traffic right next to one lane of traffic. Just can't do it. So now you got two options. You can build a new trail from Miller Showers Park, bike ped trail, up all the way to Clubhouse Drive, option one. Option two, you can use the road as the trail and close it to vehicular traffic. We closed it during pandemic for a pilot. Some people liked it. Some people didn't. It's up to the council, and I'm going to be making a recommendation to them to close it. And I can go through the reasons, but that's basically the process, and happy to talk about what the pluses and minuses are, too.
Well, I think that being the mayor doesn't give you all the power. This is how it works. I'm trying to understand, correct?
That's exactly right.
You can go to the council and say, I want it closed, and you can list your reasons, which I'm going to hear from you here in just a second, but the council can go tell you to fly a kite, and I don't mean that flippantly, but it's in a political sense, they can.
Yeah, ultimately.
So why does everybody want you in their corner? So if you got this split 50-50, how do you pick?
Well, I think the reality is a couple things. One, I can do emergency closures for safety, like we do that. We have the right to do that for 180 days. But ultimately, the council is responsible for deciding speed limits or, you know, stop signs or traffic, all that kind of traffic stuff. Now, the reality also is that if the mayor doesn't recommend something, it's harder for the council just to come up with it on their own. So if the status quo tends to remain status quo unless I propose something. Now, that's not always true. The council can propose things, and they certainly can here. But we need to make a decision about this. The main reason is I have to know what to do to implement the transportation plan. I and the next mayor need to know. Do I need to build a new trail, which costs about $4 million probably, or can I use the road, which costs about $1 million? So I need to know, and that's one of the main reasons I think using the road is smarter, because we save $3 million, which we can use in a bunch of other better ways. The second main reason is you would never put a road through this park if you built it today. We don't put roads through the middle of a beautiful park. And the third reason is it's not really a key connector in our road vehicle plan. And the fourth reason is anybody who wants to get to the parking lots and to get to the use of the park in a vehicle can still do it once the road is closed. There will be full access to all the parking lots and to get as close to the shelters as you can get today. So there's actually a column in the HT that explains it in more detail. It's good for our climate. It's what the park should be. And I actually think, Mike, in 20 years or even in 5 years, people will say, this is wonderful, thank you for doing it, but it's a little bit of a bump to get there. Ultimately, the council will vote on it in the weeks and months ahead. It's not my decision.
And when the council votes on it, is that it? Does it go on? Can it be brought up the next council or after the next election? Or because we know we got new people coming in. So
yeah.
Okay.
That's a good question. A new council could change it. And a mayor could say, I don't have the money. You know, they could say, I don't have the money to spend $4 million on a trail. And so there could have some back and forth like that. So nothing is final. If a new trail got built, that would kind of settle it for a while, probably, because you would have spent the money and all that. But I was just down there last weekend. It's a beautiful park, actually. As you might imagine, the waterfall was more than average. It was really nice to see all that. And I just think it's a spectacular park that I want to make sure we value as much as we can as a park, and there are plenty of alternatives for vehicular traffic. But I totally get it. There are some different views, and we'll see what council thinks about it.
Okay, so there we go. I'm glad we've got that cleared up. And if anybody, they know how to get a hold of you. You have a big survey that's coming out. You've
yes.
done this before. So if this is something that's near and dear to you, whether it's parks or whatever issue here in the city, this anonymous? Well, there's two surveys, and I know we talked about this last year. I'm going to let you handle it again, but there's a couple different ways. There's one that's hyper-technical, and then there's one that you're going to ask. Everybody, tell me all about it.
So I'm really excited we do this. This is the fourth time we've done this city survey. We do it every 2 years. It's a little scary, I will tell you, as an elected official, but I wanted to do it anyway. I've done it four times. It's a scientific survey to ask the people of Bloomington, what do you think about police and fire and safety and parks and height limits and all kinds of things about the city. We compare ourselves to other cities around the country because our survey folks do this in a few hundred cities. It's a scientific way to get the perception of what people think instead of just who shows up at a meeting to speak about it. So please fill out the survey if you get it. We send it about 3,000 people. All the answers are online, the previous surveys. You can see, we're starting to see trends that tell us things. We use it as we develop budgets, as we look at these kinds of issues, it's really important. Now, if you get mailed the survey, that means you're part of the randomly selected, and we really encourage you to fill it out. If you don't get mailed the survey, like I actually got it last year, but I didn't get it the last time, We welcome you to go online and fill it out and give your view anyway. We keep those answers separate. It's all anonymous, but we don't mix the scientific one with the non-scientific one, but they're both helpful.
You're not stuffing the ballot box. You're not sending them to your buddies. You're not, well, people, because sometimes
right.
people
no,
don't,
no.
if they don't know, they can come up with some wonderfully, wildly
yeah,
entertaining angles to it. But no, so that's why you keep them separate. You do have the scientific part, and then you have a survey, and that survey is great, but you also have ways daily to email the city
yes.
and make your, so you're not missing anything is, I guess, the greater point. So if you're new to this and you're just figuring this all out, there are a couple different ways. The scientific part is the most important because it has standards and collection in how that is, how that's
yeah,
happening.
Yeah, look, it's demographically correct.
There you go.
We make sure we get people from all areas of the city, all ages, sex, gender, race. You know, different, and it lets us look, there may be different views about safety in different parts of the city, which is really helpful. So the scientific survey is reliably accurate, and it also lets us benchmark against other cities. We have been off the charts in terms of engagement in civic activities, even compared to Boulder, Colorado, and Ann Arbor, and Springfield, and a bunch of other cities that we compare ourselves to. So it's also quite interesting. You can just go online and look at the past surveys and see what you think of it.
You can do that at the bloomington.in.gov and find all of that information at the tip of your fingers. How long do we have to fill this survey out, and how long will you leave the one online for the non-chosen few to get in there and get things going?
Good question. So the scientific survey is out in mailboxes now, and people can do it on paper or online. They get a special, I think they get a special code. We don't open up the public one for a few weeks. We just let the, and that's all how they do it, the scientific
gotcha.
Survey folks. The public one will open up late April for a number of weeks. I don't know the exact time, but you can watch for that. And you and I can talk about it when we know the exact time.
Yeah. And again, we've got, this will be breaking news again once that time is open and ready to go. The voice you hear is Mayor John Hamilton. He joins me every Tuesday, except in the month of March, to the final Tuesday. But we make good things happen, and we try to get to all the big issues. And now you know what happens when we don't talk for a few weeks because all this stuff starts to pile up. What do you mean I can't turn on red anywhere anymore? I'm blaming you for this. I told Kaisa, I said, I'm going to go easy on you, but when the mayor's back,
here comes a heater, huh?
Well, I'm not sure it's
okay.
a heater, but you guys threw us a curveball because okay. here's what I don't understand, and you can help me out with, which is great. We put in all the traffic circles. Why? So you don't have a four-way stop that's backed up for a half a mile and all this pollution's happening and no one's going anywhere. Traffic circles
right.
move traffic. So not turning on red moves, that stops traffic. And now all of a sudden we're waiting and waiting and waiting, whether there's no one at the intersection or not. And then it kind of like, why do we have this but not that and that but not this? And I said, well, you know what? Mayor Hamilton's going to have the answer for me.
Well, look, this is actually an example of where the council weighed in on this and explicitly directed us to do this. We were actually a little concerned about both the price of doing this and the direction and all, but they passed an ordinance, and that is their prerogative to pass an ordinance to increase right turn on red, no right turn on red signs, and we follow the ordinance. So now I will say this.
Don't you have veto power somewhere hanging around?
I do have veto power, though. No, I didn't veto that. It would have had a lot of other stuff in it. But I will say this. So, you know, you're always balancing in road management a bunch of different issues. The single most important is safety. We have had pedestrian deaths in the city of you know, young people and others who have died because of a right turn on red. And that's a big red flag. If we have death, we want to have zero deaths in our city based upon traffic and accidents like that. And we have very few, but we take that extremely seriously. So I understand and am sympathetic that if you're sitting at a intersection in the middle of the day and the weather's great and you see nobody coming and there's nobody there, like, why do I have to sit here? The answer is because when it's nighttime or it's rainy and dark and you've got a big SUV and you're looking to the left to see if anybody's there, and you look to the right to see if anybody's there, but there's a walk sign that somebody's walking, you can turn into them. And then we've had that happen and had fatalities. So I appreciate that it's frustrating, and I'm not sure this is the perfect answer, but we do really take priority with safety, and we've had, you know, we learn from experience, so that's where this came from.
Well, and the other part is, and I tell people this all the time, you don't have to like the answer, but here it is. This is the why. So that's part of it.
There are other things, you know. Cities sometimes, for example, have walk signs that don't let any traffic go while we let pedestrians cross.
Right.
You've probably been in cities where that's the case too, or you have more priority to pedestrians to protect them. The challenge is if you have a walk sign for a pedestrian and a right turn allowed by a car, it's a recipe that you can have problems, and we've had problems. So I'm sympathetic to that, and it's not like this is the perfect forever answer, but it's something that the council wanted us to do to protect life and health, and so that's what we're doing.
Well, there you go. And again, that's the explanation, folks. You want the questions asked, they're asked. Now, if you like it or not, that's up to you. We don't tell anybody what to like around here. That's you can figure that out. Now, speaking of traffic and stuff, I'm not going to get into the stop sign and all that. Sheridan, I'm not going there, but I am going to the 7 line because I saw that. Where did I see that headline today? When did that pop up?
Well, that we've had a couple commissions. So the question is, we've got the 7 line in right in front of you, I know, and we took away some stop signs so that the buses and the bikes and the pedestrians and the vehicles could move more smoothly east and west on 7th Street. And we've had some accidents since that happened, since we put the 7 line in. And we always are happy to look at data. And so there's some question, should we put those stop signs back in on the 7th line and 7th Street? And our engineer has presented to two different commissions, the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission and the Traffic Commission, and they have both recommended that we return one stop sign at Dunn and 7th, where we've had, I think, maybe 10 car accidents. There have been no serious injuries, maybe no fatalities I know, and maybe one serious. And they're all mostly been car-to-car. So that's a proposal. Again, that's going to go to council. Some have wanted more stop signs back, but that's not been the recommendation of those two commissions. And again, that'll go to council. Our engineer is always watching for where we have accidents and if there are things we can do to improve it. So that's where that comes from.
Yeah, and the tough part with that is the line is to get traffic moving through there where it doesn't have to stop, but the other people that can't read the signs across traffic doesn't stop. Well, at least we know what a big red sign does. Even if we can't read it, we know that it means to stop. So I understand it. I don't love all of it, but it doesn't matter what I love. It has to be for the greater good in sense like that. So I love the 7 line. I tell everybody about it because it is the best way to, quote-unquote, sneak around when there's big traffic, when there's big events, when everything else is happening, and one stop sign is not going to slow it down. And again, Dunn is probably the busiest, as your numbers tell
you. It is. You know, like you, I think it's also, from my perspective, partly just getting people used to it. We need to make sure the speeds on the 7th Street don't get too excessive. That's one issue. Because when you have, you know, people see that run, and it's a very narrow street, which tends to slow people down. But
it's downhill one way. That helps.
And it is downhill. But, you know, look, I think it's a hugely valuable. I think in the long run, that connection from the B-line all the way to campus, and then, as you know, we've talked about, it's ultimately going to have a connection all the way to the 446 and the east side and Brewster's and all that. And that'll be a great east-west corridor. So I do want to protect it, but we're tweaking it as we go to watch what the data tell us.
Well, and it just, again, it's living, breathing, just like the rest of us, and things change. So there's not a you should do that. That's how things should be. It should be safer if it needs to be safer, and things can change down the road. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. I saw a headline perhaps last week about firefighters leaving in record numbers. I don't have all the details. How many are leaving, and how easy or difficult is it to replace if that is the case?
So it's an issue we're certainly watching. You know, we've talked about police and the difficulty of hiring police, which is true in every city in America, and firefighters were feeling that a little bit. One specific thing that happened was last year the State General Assembly changed the law. You used to have to live in the county or in a contiguous county of a fire department if you were in a municipal fire department, and they changed the law to say you can now live 50 miles away. So what that did was it kind of opened up the marketplace a lot to central Indiana and, you know, suburban areas and others to compete among all of us for firefighters. So we are seeing that happen some. It's a concern. Now, let me say, you know, we have an amazing fire department. They've got a terrific record. They've had 7 years with one fire death, which is nothing. We've never had a run like that. They do a great job. They saved 11 lives during that same period from fires. So they're fantastic. We love them and what they do. They're top-ranked ISO 1. There's very few in the country ranked that way. So they're doing great, but we are occasionally losing people to a place that offers them more money or some kind of different term. So we're working hard on that. We've given extra money. We're supporting housing incentives. We've added pension supports and other things, and we'll continue to work on that. But, you know, a mayor thinks about public safety every day, and that's true for me, and we're working on that as well as the police department, and including, as you know, building the showers and a new headquarters and three new fire major rehab. So there's a lot going on, but there's always something.
Well, there is. If not, it would be a boring place, and no one would want to live here, move here, or do anything else. And Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. And what is there a critical number or level you don't want to get to? Are we near that? What I don't know what the right question is here, because I understand people come and go, and I understand why they come and go. But we're not in any danger, I don't want to project.
No, we're very safe, you know. Now, one of the things I like about having national accreditation, both for the police and the fire, is you have an objective periodic review of how you're doing, which I think is really important and helpful, and we've scored top numbers on both our police and fire, and we'll continue to want to do that. We have, you know, a fire department has to have a certain number of people on shift at any moment. So, if we have somebody get sick or somebody leaves, we sometimes have to do overtime with people running more than their regular shift, and often they volunteer, but sometimes we have to require overtime. And we don't like to do that, but we make sure we have the staffing on hand. Now, if you end up doing a lot of that, you can wear people out. They can be, you know, they can don't want to have to work that much overtime, and we're very sensitive to that and working on that. We've got terrific fire administrators who are on top of this, but look, we're not the only employer these days who's struggling to find workers. You know, you go to a restaurant and they can't stay open as long as they want because they don't have enough people, but we need to stay open, and we will stay open, but it's a constant effort, and I'll be working with City Council and others to make sure we keep the excellent service that we have.
Well, and the tough part is there's not going to be ARPA money forever, right?
That's correct. The federal rescue money was one-time money, which we used, and we passed a tax that helped support public safety, and there's a special public safety fund, but you know, anyway, it's a constant effort. But again, let me just say, I'm incredibly proud of who we have. They're fantastic employees. They're fantastic people. Please thank them if you see them out around town. They protect us every moment of every day. And, you know, whether it's police or fire, there are stories you hear from around the country, and we do everything we can to make sure we don't go through any bad stories like that here.
Well, again, that's our biggest hope. And again, you talk about public safety, and that's a good way of addressing it. When we talk next week, we're going to have Kirkwood ready to go for the warmer months.
Yep.
It's going to be a little rainy next week. I'm not sure if that's, but we got to start somewhere. But speaking of climate change, Project 46, Climate 46, what your mayors and everybody else getting together, that's a big deal.
I'm really proud of this, Mike, and thank you for asking. Project 46, which is a kind of a reference to State Road 46 that connects Bloomington, Nashville, and Columbus in our respective counties. And that trio of cities and towns has come together, and as you mentioned last week, we announced a plan to work together as a region on climate issues. That means work together on transportation and how we can move people about as efficiently and sustainably as we can. It means thinking about our building efficiencies. It means looking at our industries and our businesses and how well they're doing on climate change and learning from each other and setting some common goals. You know, we have a climate action plan for Bloomington. We don't have one for Monroe County. We don't have one. I don't think Nashville and Brown County have one. We can work together to set some goals. By the way, we also think when we work together, we can probably attract more money, more support from the outside if we're teamed up like this. So the next phase is going to be asking our city councils and town councils and county councils to support this effort. We'll put a little funding in so that we can get some staff or some contractors to help do the work. Climate change is with us forever, Mike. We have to deal with this. We're going to be dealing with changes in our weather, with threats to flooding and other issues. We're going to be needing to respond to the economy is going to change. Prices of energy are going to change. The delivery of energy is going to change. So this is all a really important step to work on this regionally. It's bipartisan. He's a Republican mayor. I'm a Democrat mayor. It's a regional, small city, bigger city, rural. It's really good, and I'm proud we got it going, and I hope our councils will all support it.
And this is just the beginnings of it moving forward.
Yes,
so
it is.
That's exciting. Okay, what have I missed?
Oh my, I don't know.
Did I hit any? I think we got all the big ones, didn't we?
I think we did. Got mayor at the market on Saturday.
Oh, wait a
starting
second.
The first market, and I'm going to be there.
That's the first.
The first one,
oh
April
goodness.
Fool's Day, no fool, I'll be there with my deputy mayor, Mary Catherine Carmichael. We'll both be there from 10 to noon, I think, and it's the first day of our wonderful summer farmers market. I don't know if it'll feel like summer, but it's officially starting.
Let's go to the forecast just to make sure
giving any
terrible. Do you like wind? Are you a wind? do you like playing the wind?
I'm okay with wind.
I'm going to work on this the rest of the week. Windy during the morning, 20 to 30 miles an hour. Higher gusts are possible.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I better bring my weights for our tent. That's one thing.
That's right. Everybody will have to have everything nailed down to some way, shape, or form. So this Saturday, well, that is
the
official.
It's fun. You know, it's fun to start that season, and it can be chilly, but the vendors will be there. There will be food to buy. And the deputy mayor and I will be there if you want to stop by and give me a piece of your mind or suggestion or tell me what to ask Mike next time. You know,
right.
What I should ask you. That'd be
yeah,
fair.
Turn the tables on me. That's
there
good.
You go.
I like that. What time does everything get started on Saturday?
I think 9 o'clock.
Okay.
On Saturday.
I was going to say 8 sounds a little early for that. So let's. You can always go to the farmers market page at.
If I get that wrong, you can check that out. But I think it's 9 o'clock.
Yeah, I would think the sun rises at 7:30. I don't think we're getting started that early.
But
it has
welcome.
To be 9. It has to be 9. Well, I'll check. We'll make sure we have our windbreakers on and everything else. But that will kick off the first of 5 Saturdays in the month of April. How much does it cost, again, to go to the farmer's market?
Oh, yeah. How much does that cost? It's free.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
Free to go, and there's plenty of garages, whether it's the newer one at 10th Street, whether it's the one at... behind the Hilton Garden Inn, whether it's the one I'm looking at 7th and Walnut, there's plenty of places to park and plenty of, it'll be a little chilly to get things started there, but we know the pent up, we're ready to go. We're ready to get warmer. We're ready to get to summertime, and we're ready to have fun. Thanks for your time, my friend.
Everybody have a good week. Thank you, Mike.